Bem, uma pessoa pergunta o que é que o sétimo raio trará.
Someone is asking what the seventh ray will bring.
Existem energias fundamentais.
For those who are not aware, there are basic energies in the cosmos. And the seventh ray is an energy of order and ceremonial. It is an energy that is trying to become more firmly anchored in the planet. There is a very important seventh ray hierarchy that exists here on planet Earth, and it is becoming ever more firmly set in order to complete a cycle. As this seventh ray comes in, and as it becomes established, we will have a greater understanding of education, of religion, and of science, because we still do not really understand these things well. We still do not have a correct understanding of either education or religion or science. We can see the state of education, of religion, and of science in the planet. But with the coming of the seventh ray, this will change. We will have a much broader and deeper understanding of education. We will identify education with the evolution of our spirit, and not education directed towards external things, material things, things concerning the personality. We will see education, above all, as the elevation of consciousness, rather than simply getting into material matters. Education aims at elevating one's consciousness, because in this way, material concerns will be reflected in a different way through humans, through human interests. With an education that is inspired by the seventh ray, with a more mature, a more developed education, we will take the whole person into account and not go on doing what we do today, which is to separate personality, soul, monad, bodies. This is fragmentation. This applies to an education which is already coming to the end of its cycle. This new education is still inconceivable, because we would have to be slightly more intuitive to be able to absorb it and to be able to surrender ourselves to this great energy. In this period of transition, while this education is not yet in effect, because we are under the old model during this transition, education is first of all assisting the integration of the bodies. We cannot consider ourselves as a whole being, a single being, until we become integrated with our bodies. So long as the mental, the emotional, and the physical etheric bodies are not aligned, so long as they are not governed by the soul, this all-round education cannot occur, because we cannot feel that we are a united being, a single being. So this work is going on for us to become aligned, to unify our bodies, to unify our soul with those bodies. And in this education, we have an intuitive perception of reality, rather than the mental or emotional or instinctive one that we have today. Through intuition, we know things without using the mind. And in this mature education, we use experiences and we use the events of life as a complement rather than as something important. We need to work with intuition, and all of that which is below intuition, we have to consider to be a supplement, a confirmation, one more instrument, but not that which is the most important. So you see that schools are all wrong. Universities are really retrograde, because they have nothing to do with these principles of the complete education. When we first begin to take this education into account, when we become aware of this education, we should be guided to seek and contact our inner source of knowledge and wisdom. So if someone gets in touch with the energy of education, this should be a first step to awaken the person, to help one draw closer to one's inner center. And this is carried out right from childhood. So we help people to seek their inner nuclei of knowledge. Very well. As for religion, we are not going to discuss what it does or what it did in the past. This religion, this structure, based on laws that should be supramental laws, not laws of the earth, not material laws. Religion should be built on other laws, higher laws. And if there were an external organization on earth, it should represent these higher laws rather than material laws. So this is something very sensitive and rather complicated to carry out in this civilization. Now, this which we call religion, this energy, this manifestation, exists in order to give everyone the knowledge of the evolutionary laws. And these evolutionary laws are gradually given to an individual. One is gradually informed about these laws until one is able to reach the source of knowledge within oneself. So religion should not be something to condition us and keep us dependent on it forever, but rather religion should be the orderly presentation of certain laws. And for this there should be priests, there should be priestly monads who can gradually introduce these laws so that the laws may become known, and if lived, they gradually lead an individual towards an inner contact. And from this point on, the person no longer needs to be guided by external laws, no matter how advanced these may be, because one has inner light, and this may not necessarily depend on outer systems. So you can see how these forces of involution on earth are crafty. Because as soon as humanity on earth understood that the source of knowledge is within each one, laws began to be put into effect, making it obligatory for people to attend these schools. And today, those who don't go to school are sent to jail. So you see how crafty these forces of involution are. Because as soon as we understand that school is useless, that school is retrograde, right away it becomes compulsory for us, by earthly law, to attend school. So we are really living in critical times. Critical times do not only involve earthquakes, sea quakes, but critical times are also these in which we find ourselves facing earthly laws and facing situations that we know in principle are retrogressive and in which we have to participate in one way or another. Now, this religion that is not yet here and which really has nothing to do with today's formal religion, this new religion is beginning to show signs in modern spirituality, in the culture of modern spirituality, in the current spiritual freedom. The seventh ray is bringing this in. The seventh ray is bringing in this free spirituality, unattached to any sect, unattached to any institution. Many people already have the spirituality. Millions are already developing this, and they are not associated with anything. Now, regarding science, science should basically give us insights into the meaning of the one life, of the one life, and not of so many isolated things, of so many separate things. First, it should put us in touch with the quest for unity, for the one life. And then within this unity, we can observe the manifestations of that one life. Today, science does the opposite. It starts with details. It starts with things that are manifested, with microbes, with particles, in order to arrive at medicine and medications. It should be the other way around. We should start with this one life and attempt to perceive this one life rather than the details or things that are separate, and then recognize the infinite manifestations within that one life. But this kind of science is not based on the same thing as today's science. Today it is based on mental research, it is based on the intellect, and real science, the new science, is not this. The new science is knowledge of the monadic level. It is knowledge of the monad. It is the viewpoint of the monad on everything. So today, you see something mentally or you see something intellectually. And this has nothing to do with the new science. In the new science, you are centered on your monad until you begin to see things from that point of view. Because from the point of view of the monad, other people are completely different from the way we see them. The point of the view of the monad is different. The point of view of the spirit is different. This new science is not learned in schools. There is no course to teach it. There is no curriculum to develop this subject. But this science gradually emerges in individuals as they experience expansions of consciousness. So their consciousness expands, and with each expansion, they perceive a certain degree, a certain level of this science. Now, this seventh ray about which the person had asked, this seventh ray works very much on the mineral kingdom, on the animal kingdom, the human kingdom, and it also works interrelating these kingdoms. The mineral kingdom is the product of rhythms, of the perfect fusion of cadences and will. This is the mineral kingdom. It is an organized rhythm and a perfect will. So it is a compact kingdom, a unified kingdom, which in the future will take on far greater expression than it does now. Because in the future, the mineral kingdom will be completely radioactive, much more than it is today. And the radiation of the mineral kingdom will be a great manifestation of God, of creation. Through the action of the seventh ray, the animal bodies in the animal kingdom, including those of humans, are being refined, are being made more subtle, and they will undergo a development. Of course, I'm talking about bodies, not about souls. I'm talking about the seventh ray in matter, the seventh ray in bodies. The soul may be on another ray. So these animal bodies will be much more refined and will undergo a development that we cannot even imagine at this time, so that souls may find much more adequate vehicles in these human bodies for them to be able to expand and to create here. All of this depends on what kind of interaction will be gradually established between the human and the animal kingdoms. Because both have these bodies, both humans and animals have the same type of body. And so these two kingdoms, the animal and the human, would have to understand each other better and work better together for this refinement to happen. An animal would have to stop thinking with its solar plexus, because an animal does not think with its brain. An animal has a brain, but it thinks with its solar plexus. And humans would have to stop thinking with their brains So animals should begin to think with their brains, and humans should stop thinking with their brains in order to think with their souls, with their higher levels, in order to abide in the thought of the higher levels. And for this to occur, this relationship must be harmonious, beautiful, a beautiful relationship between humans and animals. And with this in mind, I glanced at a book with paintings by Nicholas Rerich, where I saw some very interesting ancient scenes. For example, Lao Tse being carried by an ox, the attitude of Lao Tse, sitting in a cart pulled by an ox. You see respect, you see order, you see harmony, and the ox pulling the cart. And there was also a painting of Confucius on horseback, Confucius riding. And his posture is completely different to that of the riders that we know. So we can see how art can help us to understand certain things. Art can even figuratively show us attitudes, positions, situations. Since up to the present time, there has not been a correct interaction between the human kingdom and the animal kingdom, ever since the time of Atlantis, the passage of animals into the human kingdom has been partially blocked. Because if there had been a correct interaction, there would have been a harmonious relationship. And by harmonious relationship, we mean for animal lives to transmigrate into the human kingdom, and for human lives to transmigrate into the spiritual kingdom. But this seems to be a little difficult now. So in the time of Atlantis, the passage of animals into the human kingdom became more limited. And so for now, animals rarely move up into the human kingdom. It is as though the animal kingdom were waiting for the situation to change and for certain destinies of the human kingdom to become clearer, so that the doorway for animals to transmigrate into the human kingdom to be opened once more. I repeat, in the seventh ray, some do move on, but not in the extent that this transmigration should occur. Medicine would also have to make some headway for this linkage to occur, for a more developed love between these kingdoms. But medicine is one of those responsible for this linkage not occurring, or for it having not occurred at the rate it should have. And this is because medicine uses animals for testing or massacres animals in medical experiments. There is absolutely no need for this to happen, but humanity is a bit slow to understand things. And for this reason, the animal kingdom is waiting. Because according to karma, it would mean venturing into an inhospitable region. Because animals have to stop being aggressive. So the way for them to become less aggressive would be by entering the human kingdom. But with this aggressiveness of the human kingdom towards the animal kingdom, what is the animal going to do here? Isn't that so? So these are all things which seem clear, but they are really not so clear to those who direct and organize this external life of civilization. Now, the seventh ray has a more open, a freer field of activity in its work with the devas, the devic kingdom. The devas do not have a concrete mind, they do not have free will, and do not have a physical body. Devas are an evolution that is parallel to the human evolution. and they are beings or are consciousnesses, but in these conditions, without a physical body, without free will, and without a concrete mind. They do not have an individual consciousness because they are groups. Devas are gatherings of beings. They feel that they are more of a group than individuals, except some devas that are specially individualized. And the seventh ray, then, works on the devas, and the seventh ray is teaching the devas to build bodies for us humans that are more subtle and more receptive to energies. Because human bodies and animal bodies are built by the devas, we think they are formed in the wombs of the mothers. But this is a material fact. It is really the devas that build the bodies on the subtle level. So the seventh ray is working on the devic kingdom. It is teaching the devic kingdom to build animal and human bodies that are more receptive to the energies. So it is the devic work that is going on to make future human and animal bodies become more receptive, to become more permeable to certain energies. Today, for us to refine our bodies, to make our bodies more subtle, to make our bodies more receptive to higher things and less vulnerable to these waves, these vibrations on the horizontal level, today we could work with sound and with colors to do this for ourselves as well as for the animal kingdom. Many already have perceived that animals, as well as plants, react to sounds in a positive way. They react to sounds, and they also react to colors. But it is up to us to have them develop this. But first of all, we ourselves have to be interested in all this, and we also have to be open to these possibilities and be predisposed to better understand sounds, to better understand colors. We ourselves have to experience colors, and these are simple things. You can notice the effect of a color when you wear it, the impact the color of certain clothing has on you. You try putting on clothing of another color and you see the influence this has. This is real, and we would need to be open to these things. We would have to be aware of them in order to learn all this. Some mantras have a role in this. Here we have several mantras, and it would be good for us to try out these mantras to see what effect they produce on us and see what kind of instrument they are for us. There may be a mantra amongst all those which we know that would develop certain aspects of ours, and another mantra that would develop other aspects. And there are also mantras for animals. And there are also mantras for plants. And we have here a field of observation. We have a very large field of study. All of this is research that we should be doing with colors, with sounds, in this relationship. There is a lot of research and study for us to carry out here. And when we come together to recite mantras, we could be there present, surrendering, serene, attentive, lucid, and observe what is developing through all of this. It is good for us to talk about devas, because since they are present, since they are in another dimension, a contact can take place, an attunement. And our relationship with them can change. And so the vibration in our life can also change because they manifest through vibration. The devas do not talk, the devas do not think, the devas do not emit a sound, but the devas emit vibrations on their level, on the subtle level. And if we can perceive this vibration of the devas, our own vibration can change. Our vibration becomes more subtle. It stops being an animal vibration in order to become a different type of vibration, a different level, another grade of vibration. So besides vibrating and therefore influencing, educating our vibration, our way of being receptive to these inner things, these subtle things, these more delicate things, these devas are also there to build new forms, to destroy other forms. They destroy as well as build without having a concept of negative or positive. That is to say, when a deva destroys something, it does this with the same impetus with which it builds. There is no harm in destroying when something needs to disappear, when something has to disintegrate. And a deva understands this very clearly. A deva is aware of this without thinking, without reasoning. It is joined to its own hierarchy, to the devic hierarchy. And in the innermost levels of this hierarchy, there are devic entities that know the devic work on the planet. A tiny deva of this kind in our midst, in the gardens, or in the plants, in the crops, in the environment, even these devas receive their orders from their hierarchy to destroy, to build, and they are obedient because they do not have free will. They are a very special evolution on this planet. In cataclysms, in earthquakes, in those very impelling occurrences, the devas are present, both to maintain things whole, the plants, the trees, as well as within the forces that destroy, the forces that purify. In our bodies, in human bodies, the devic work is to help our bodies to become more flexible and thus to have a greater capacity to recover, a greater capacity to be healed. So if we are working with healing, if we are treating people, it is most essential for us to have the cooperation of devas, because the power of recovery of a body, the capacity of a body to react to a treatment, to a medication, can come from a devic stimulation, because the body may not be able to do that alone. At that moment, the soul may not be able to totally imbue the body. So here, a doctor, a healer, counts on devic presences, on the cooperation of this line of evolution. Because the deva enters at this point to make the recovery possible. This, of course, can only happen when one's karma permits it. But we can keep all of this in mind, because at any moment we may become aware of this, and it can begin to happen to us. Another thing which devas do with our bodies is to develop our physical magnetism, the power of attraction of our body. Our body can attract forces. It can attract energies. Our body can attract the effect of colors. Our body can attract and absorb the effect of sounds. And the devas are working on our bodies in all of this. And also our capacity to absorb the rays of the sun. Many of us need to absorb more of the sun's rays
certos momentos, em certos horários.
Not the rays of the sun the way they are now at certain moments and certain times. So there are the devas which are present in the rays of the sun, which work with the rays of the sun. And there are the devas which work with our bodies, so that our bodies may absorb the rays correctly and harmoniously. And the devas can also build in our bodies a resistance to harmful solar rays, those solar rays that are not positive. So you see the importance of our being aware of this hidden life, of our being aware of this kingdom, and of our being aware of our soul as well, because only our soul can give a deva an indication of what kind of work it can do on our body. We need to develop harmony. We need to be aligned and in harmony so that we can bring all of this into our consciousness and so that our consciousness may be worked on by all of those devic presences. But our soul can communicate with a certain level of devas, and some very important work can be done there together. And this will give us a physical, etheric refinement and sensitivity which we have never known, which humanity has never known. So the seventh ray is bringing in all of this, this kind of world, this type of action, using all of these elements. For us to get to know these devas better, for us to get to know more about this line of work the devas do with us, which we can receive as brothers of another evolution, and be very connected with them and their work, we can say that they are very different to us, including in the following way. We as human beings have the possibility of regressing. We are in a natural evolution and can backslide, as you know. We can regress and then continue evolving again. The deva never regresses. A deva only evolves. And a deva evolves a great deal when it serves humanity. So to accept a deva, to be in contact with a deva, to be in harmony with a deva, is like giving the deva an opportunity to serve and therefore to evolve. And for us this is a very good contact. For us this is a very evolutionary contact, because we are thus joined, we work together with a line of consciousness of beings that never regresses. So we are unified with them, and it can help us to go forward, so long as we don't give any cause to stop or regress, because this can be a very great impulse for humanity, because humanity regresses and devas do not. They only evolve. The point of contact with this is pureness of intention. So if we have a pure intention, if we are not utilitarian with these things, if we are not overly interested in material things, this can happen in a very natural way. See, to be disinterested in material things does not mean simply to be detached. Anything which attracts you, anything which appeals to you, anything which draws you away from this purity, from this innocence, this simplicity, within the characteristics of the devic kingdom, within devic energy, all of this is considered to be an obstacle to integration, to merging, to cooperation. The cooperation of devas with us has always existed. But if we keep ourselves pure, if we keep ourselves unhampered, unattached to all that is material, this will help the unification to occur much more easily. So let's say that there are devas present in a certain environment. If there is disagreement in that environment, If there is conflict in that environment, dense vibrations, criticism, resentfulness, all of this which is part of human interaction, the devas have a very limited field of work there. Because as devic consciousnesses, devas can come very close to our consciousness, and there can be a slight merging of these two consciousnesses. So we can continue as humans, we can continue our human path, but we can have devic elements in our consciousness, seeds of this kingdom. This is very important because it is part of the unification of the kingdoms, which must take place at the end of a Manvantara cycle. So this unification of the kingdoms begins this way. Something else which can happen is that this pureness demonstrated by a human being can become so real, this purity can become so highly developed, that a human being, an individual human, can enter into the devic kingdom. And a deva as well, for the sake of service, and through an affinity with service in the human kingdom, can even enter the human kingdom and have an experience in a physical body. As for some ancient figures and even some persons cited in the Bible, it is not very clear if they were human or if they were devas in human physical bodies. This chaotic planetary situation, this situation that we are living, may curtail the field of action of the devas. But it is not chaos which makes them withdraw. They may withdraw if they are not accepted, if they are opposed. So if it is not possible for a deva to develop all of the work which it could do, then it may even back away. But it is a question of not wasting energy, not because opposition causes its withdrawal. This does not happen in all cases. There are some devas that remain in even the most hostile places, who stay on in the most offensive places, depending on the nature of the deva. And there are those devas that develop a certain type of magnetism, a magnetism which corresponds very well to the magnetism of plants, which matches the magnetism of the plant kingdom. And these can become true guardians of forests. Many things which we cannot do to benefit the plant kingdom, such as avoid fires, avoid diseases, avoid illnesses, avoid disasters, we cannot do this, but the devas can. The devas have this power, certain types of devas. So when we set aside a reserved area, this includes offering this area to the kingdom of the devas, because there the devic kingdom feels responsible for that area, responsible for that work, and everything develops on another level of harmony. If we turn over a reserved area to the devas, this means that we must really not interfere in that area, so that the devic work there can become much freer. Some devas are called green devas, linked to the plant kingdom, which can work with the air devas and the water devas. If we really leave these areas truly alone and entrusted to them, there are air devas which are in space and which are a part of the air. There are water devas which are in the rain and the rivers and the springs. These are the white devas. They are given these names because some people can see them with inner vision. And while the soul of the being is still not completely attuned to this and still does not know what it is all about, these inner visions are in colors. So we know the meaning of the green deva, the white deva, the violet deva, what they are, how they come together, what they are made up of. And those plant devas, those water devas, those air devas can carry out very important work in that reserved area which has been entrusted to the devas for mineral, plant, and even animal development, if there are animals in that area. If we have a peaceful mind, a calm mind, if we have no antagonism, no criticism, if we are not attached to material situations, to personal situations, if we learn to hold ourselves above certain dense human things, and if we attend to what is important, to focus on what is evolutionary, then we gradually learn to recognize others who do this, who live this way. Because someone who lives this way does not talk about this. The person does not say, oh, I work this way. You need to work in this way to recognize your co-workers, to recognize your collaborators, to uplift our level of relationship, to uplift our level of interaction. So we look at somebody and say, look there, this is a possible collaborator in these things. This is different to saying, look there, so-and-so is like this or like that or the other. Do you understand? You have to uplift this. You have to move away from this human level. Not that we are going to become a deva, because this is another evolution, but we are going to become a collaborator of these other evolutions which are here amongst us. They are amongst us, acting, creating here, and we need to learn to perceive them. We need to learn to recognize them. But for this, we need to carry out some transformations. Well, one detail is that we do not need to be clairvoyants in order to consciously participate in these things. With clairvoyance, you participate more consciously. But in the field of devas, in the work with devas, the physical eye can see them, even without clairvoyance. Because clairvoyance is not physical. Clairvoyance is an inner state of the mind in contact with higher levels, a mind open to other dimensions. And with clairvoyance, all of this is very clear, but even without clairvoyance, the eye has the capacity to see devas. So we can see a deva, which is not on the physical level, but with our physical eyes. Our eyes do have this capacity. The physical eye was made this way. Our physical eye is more than an open window to the physical level. Our physical eye is also a window open to an intermediary level. Our eye can open up the way to clairvoyance. We need the physical eye for this. The physical eye can give us a preview of what, with clairvoyance, we will be able to see in a much more general, complete way.